Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Pure Multifamily REIT LP First Quarter Results Conference Call. At this time, all lines are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during this call you require assistance, please press star zero for the operator. This call is being recorded on May 14th, 2019. I would now like to turn the conference over to Pure Multifamily's Vice President, Investor Relations, Andrew Gregg. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Hi, everyone. I'm Andrew Gregg, Vice President of Investor Relations for Pure Multifamily REIT, and I would like to welcome you to our discussion of our Q1 2019 financial results. We will keep our opening remarks on this call brief, trusting that you've had a chance to review our consolidated financial statements and the related MD&A dated May 13, 2019, for the 3 months ended March 31, 2019. If not, the documents are available on our website at puremultifamily.com under the Investor Info section or on SEDAR. With me today on the call are CEO Steve Evans, CFO Scott Shillington, and Senior Vice President Samantha Adams. Following our formal remarks, we will conduct a Q&A session, and instructions will be provided for you at that time to line up your questions. Before we get underway, I would like to make a safe harbor statement. The following discussion will include forward-looking statements that involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to be materially different from future results expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. These statements reflect current expectations of management regarding future events and operating performance, and Pure Multifamily assumes no obligation to update or revise them to reflect new effects, new events, or circumstances, except as required by law. For a further description of the forward-looking statements, including risk factors relating to our company and our business that could cause actual results to differ materially from the results discussed in the forward-looking statements, please refer to our MD&A dated May 13, 2019, which is available on SEDAR.com or on our website at puremultifamily.com. I would now like to pass the discussion on to our CEO, Steve Evans.
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks everyone for joining us today. Q1 2019 was another strong quarter, delivering steady and improving financial results. Scott will provide more details in a minute. We moved from the TSX Venture to the Toronto Stock Exchange effective April 29th, and although we anticipated a slight increase in liquidity, our average daily trading volume since the move has increased 74% over our historical 365-day average volumes. So that is very exciting as it opens us up to many large investors that were unable to invest in us previously with our former lower liquidity when we were on the venture. We will continue to stay disciplined and focus on operations as we have done successfully since our IPO in July of 2012. Occupancy seems to be heading in the right direction, and we are hitting our same property NOI target range of 3 to 5% each quarter. We anticipate recycling a couple of our assets and working our portfolio without the need to tap into the capital markets. Domestic U.S. migration continues to turbocharge our growth in the Texas and Arizona markets. Dallas, which is our largest portfolio presence, led the nation in job creation, adding over 100,000 jobs in the last 12 months. And on a go-forward basis, Moody's Analytics just came out with a forecast yesterday detailing the job growth projections for the top 53 cities in the U.S. for the next 10 years, and Dallas tops the list as the best market, expected to create an amazing 696,000 new jobs for the period. The good news for Pure Multifamily investors is that the number two spot goes to Houston with 548,000 new jobs. In fact, Dallas and Houston numbers are both more than double the average growth rates projected for the top 53 cities in the U.S., and will land one out of every six jobs created over the next decade. Pretty incredible numbers. The good news keeps coming as Phoenix is the number four spot with 325,000 new jobs projected, and the number 10 spot goes to Austin with 251,000 new jobs projected. Our only remaining market is San Antonio, and while it appears on the list a bit lower in terms of total job numbers since it is a smaller base, Their total job growth rate still exceeds the top city's average growth rate by 60% for the period. The upshot for this detailed report is that our portfolio is ideally positioned to deliver very strong long-term growth, stemming from the fundamental key driver of apartment demand. We could not have scripted it better. I'd now like to hand things over to Scott to walk you through the Q1 2019 financial results. Scott?
Thanks, Steve. Before going through the financial highlights for the quarter, I'd like to note that all amounts stated on this call reflect Pure Multi's interest, as disclosed within the MD&A. We feel Pure Multi's interest provides the most useful information to the unitholders when looking at our financial results. And within the MD&A, we have provided a reconciliation for these adjustments. With our upgraded and improved internal property management software, which we implemented after moving away from using the external property manager, we now have the ability to report net effective rent per residential unit, which nets out any concessions offered within the gross rent amount over the term of the lease, beginning in this first quarter of 2019 and on a comparative basis to 2018. So looking at Q1 2019 versus Q1 2018, same property rental revenue increased by 2.5%, which was driven by an increase in same property average net effective rent of 1.6% and an increase in same property physical occupancy of 80 basis points. This led to normalized same property net rental and growth, rental income growth of 4.4% and an increase in our same property NOI margin to 56.9% from 55.8% in the first quarter of 2018. At March 31st, 2019, we reported a debt-to-gross book value ratio of 52.7% and a total portfolio leased occupancy of 96.1%, which is an increase of 60 basis points compared to December 31st, 2018. Our payout ratios continue to trend in the right direction, as our FFO payout ratio was 98.9%, or 9.5 cents per unit, during the first quarter of 2019, compared to 100.2% or 9.4 cents per unit during the first quarter of 2018. And our AFFO payout ratio was 105% or 8.9 cents per unit in the current quarter, compared to 106.5% or 8.8 cents per unit in the prior year quarter. Our management's estimated NAV as at March 31st, 2019, using our IFRS cap rate of 5.02%, was $7.31 US, or $9.81 Canadian, using a 74.5 cent exchange rate. I'll now turn things over to Samantha, who will comment on our operations for the quarter.
Thank you, Scott. Just a couple of general comments to begin with. The first quarter is generally a slightly slower quarter in terms of leasing activity and revenue growth in our markets. We were also somewhat impacted by some significant rain and hailstorms, particularly in the DFW area, that had an impact on leasing activity. Secondly, we are pleased that we were able to report that we were able to hold our property insurance costs essentially flat over our 2018 costs while not compromising coverage. Many other markets are experiencing significant increases over the same period. Construction costs continue to increase in most of our markets. Materials and labor costs are driving some of these increases, which we believe may impact supply going forward. The Dallas portfolio is showing signs of recovery and improving strength. Despite some continuing supply challenges, our same property Q1 occupancy moved to 94.6%, up from 93.7% in the comparative period. The increase in occupancy and improving demand resulted in same property revenue growth for Dallas of 1.8% quarter over quarter and NOI growth of 2.8% quarter over quarter. In Houston, our properties continue to demonstrate stability. Although same property physical occupancy fell to 96.9% versus 98% in Q1 of last year, and same property revenues decreased by 0.4% quarter over quarter. You may recall that occupancy was elevated in Q1 of last year as a direct result of the aftermath of Harvey, and the slight decrease in occupancy this past quarter has impacted revenues. However, our property still delivered NOI growth of 1.6%. With respect to San Antonio, the same property numbers are continuing to improve as we continue to lower concessions. On a same property basis, our physical occupancy increased by 1.4% quarter over quarter and revenues increased by 4.2% for the quarter. This led to a very strong increase in NOI of 10.7% quarter over quarter. We continue to experience solid growth at our properties in Phoenix as well, as they delivered 9.5% NOI growth quarter over quarter. This was driven by a physical occupancy increase of 250 basis points and same property net effective rent growth of 2.1%. Our Austin property, Creekside, continues to be a bit of a challenge in the short term as the new supply in the immediate vicinity goes through the lease-up stages, which is primarily driven by concessions and locator fees. We experienced decreases in revenue growth, occupancy, and NOI quarter over quarter. However, on a more positive note, we did see net effective rent growth of 1.3%, and we believe that as we move through the prime leasing season, concessions should continue to decrease as the new builds are leased up. And it does appear as though that trend through May is continuing, and we so far May looks like we're going to have the strongest month for revenue growth that Creekside has experienced. On a portfolio-wide basis, we increased our weighted average net effective rental rates to $1,257 per occupied unit, or $1.38 per square foot for the first quarter, compared to $1,237 average rental rate per occupied unit, or $1.37 per square foot for the same quarter of 2018. The operation strategy for the rest of the year is continuing to improve revenues through value-add initiatives, resident retention, and building out our social media presence. We are also challenging our on-site and corporate team members to adopt better green practices, and given labor constraints in our markets, we remain focused on fully engaging all of our team members, regardless of position, to reduce employee turnover. As always, we continue to diligently monitor and manage our cost structure, as we are looking to constantly improve our operating margins. I will now turn things back over to Steve to wrap up.
Thanks, Samantha. As you have heard, we posted another very solid quarter financially. In fact, according to Bloomberg, our total unitholder return since our IPO up to May 9, 2019, placed Pure Multifamily as the second best performing REIT in all of Canada over that period. At a 27.2% total return per year for the past 6 3/4 years. That again is 27.2% per year for more than 6 years, or 183.7% in total return for the period. The exciting thing to me is that we feel like we are just now set to really grow and continue to post powerful results, since our strongly increased trading volumes, now that we are listed on the TSX, has opened up Pure Multi to many more large long-term value investors. That, coupled with the dynamic leading job growth numbers forecast in literally all of our portfolio cities for the next decade, placed Pure Multifamily in the ideal position to continue to deliver results that should keep us near the top of the Canadian REIT sector. Apartment fundamentals continue to be very strong. While new supply remains high in Dallas for this year and some other markets, demand continues to keep pace given the dramatic job growth that I just mentioned. And as mentioned earlier, we are seeing occupancy and concessions moving in the right direction across our portfolio. Cap rates in our markets have remained essentially flat. Mortgage financing continues to be readily available, with rates for the 10-year terms hovering at about 4%. Deal flow for the U.S. Sunbelt apartment properties remains extremely liquid, providing good opportunities for us to ultimately pursue in the future. The move to the TSX has improved our liquidity and visibility, and we're starting to see the benefits. And of course, our management estimated NAV grew over the past year to $7.31 U.S. With that, I'd like to thank our board of directors for their hard work over the past quarter, and our property management teams for their continued commitment to provide the ultimate residence experience, and of course our investors for your continued support. And I would now like to open up the lines for any questions that anybody may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Should you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a three-tone prompt acknowledging your request, and questions are polled in the order received. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. And your first question is from Brad Sturges from IA Securities. Brad, please go ahead.
Hi there.
Hey, Brad.
In terms of, I guess starting with just same property NOI, the growth was 4% in the quarter. If you were to think about that for the rest of the year, really, what should we think about in terms of growth year over year? Is that a level that is fair to assume for 2019, or how should we think about that?
Yeah, we are viewing it as being pretty consistent. So between 3 to 5%, I think, is what we targeted in the past, and we still believe that will be the case. You know, 4.4 over the last period is right in that wheelhouse at the higher end.
Yeah, it'll just whether we go up or down a little bit on that just depends when we finalize our property tax numbers kind of in beginning of Q4, hopefully.
And that's with occupancy sort of stabilizing at around the 95% level and getting kind of similar rent growth?
Yeah.
Okay. In terms of the, you know, you noted, I guess, the challenges with Creekside, and I think there's a couple other assets that have had similar challenges that have been leased up. But I guess if you were to look at the lease-up assets, in terms of the, if you were to give it a best guess in terms of when that could, the timeline to stabilize that, what, how should we be thinking about those particular assets?
Well, Creekside, you know, Touchwood, Creekside looks as though it's turning a corner. I'm interested to see how the rest of the year plays out. You know, my gut on Creekside would be this time next year. It should be fully stabilized if the trend that we started to see continues. Actually, I would suggest for probably the others that are stabilizing, we're probably within the next sort of 12-plus months we'll be looking at stabilized assets, given current trends.
Okay. And then within the portfolio, you know, it would be a smaller component of it, but are there pockets of, you know, maybe within the older assets where you are looking at like a modest or moderate renovation program where you could see a little bit better lift if you're put capital to work?
Yeah, we've started that actually on, and it'll be interesting to see where the numbers play out in Q2 actually. We've started some projects at Sambresis and Phoenix, Preserve, Prairie Creek and Bear Creek in Dallas, and Valley Ranch, sorry, as well. Those are kind of the sort of the properties that we're targeting right now.
Would you have a quantum in terms of what the budget could look like for that program and target, how you think about unlevered returns or target returns on those type of investments?
I can comment on the CapEx side. So, sorry, historical last number of years, we spent about $800 per door per year. This year, we're budgeting a total of about, works out to roughly $1,200 per door per year from a CapEx standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, any comments on the expected returns?
Yeah, well, I'll know more, to be honest with you, Brad, as we move through Q2. We're approaching this not as a must-do, but as a let's see what kind of results we can get. I mean, really what we're looking at is a 3 to 4 year payback on any investment. If we can tighten that timeline up, we will. We've had some success at Preserve so far, but I think it's a little bit early to tell.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. Your next question is from Matt Logan from RBC. Matt, please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning.
Hey, Matt.
Your NOI margins came in at a pretty healthy 57% in Q1. Can you talk about how we should be thinking about them for the full year?
Yeah, I think right around this 57% mark, give or take a point or two. Again, it depends what the final property tax numbers come in at. That's right now it's based on kind of our budget of 7% over last year on average. So I think right around this current mark is kind of how I'd be modeling it going forward.
Great. And in terms of rent growth, how should we be thinking about, you know, with the burn off in concessions, maybe the net rent growth for the next 12 months?
Yeah, I think so. We're 2.5% for net effective rent growth. You're talking about 2.5 to 3%, kind of what we figure we'll get over the year, which will lead to that, you know, 3 to 5% NOI growth.
Right.
In the end.
I appreciate the color. And on San Antonio, can you give us a quick update on your potential asset sales?
So we're looking at a couple of assets in that market that have underperformed and considering whether we will divest and reposition those into ones that will perform better. We don't really have much of an update yet. We're still in the opinion of value sort of assessment level stage, and perhaps in the coming quarter we will be able to move that further.
That's great.
In the meantime,
the numbers actually continue to improve, which is nice to see in the San Antonio market. Pretty strong.
Yeah, same property NOI was up 11% this quarter in San Antonio.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I have to acknowledge that it was because the base is pretty low, because it didn't grow for a couple of years, but we're very happy to see that, and we think that trend will continue as well. So we don't have a gun to our head. We're just trying to do the best in terms of managing our capital to the benefit of investors.
Appreciate the color. That's all for me. Thank you.
Matt, just to add on, I think I was talking about revenues, not the rent growth, and I was saying 2.5 to 3. Obviously, that factors in the occupancy increases as well a little bit to get to that 2.5 to 3 from rent.
Perfect. Appreciate the additional commentary.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question is from Himanshu Gupta from GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you and good morning.
Himanshu, how are you?
Very good. So, Steve, you mentioned that occupancy concessions are moving in the right direction. So can you elaborate what is being offered, say, in Dallas market or San Antonio market, and how has that been trending?
Sure. Each specific submarket within the Dallas, for example, is going to be a little bit different, but I'm going to turn it over to the expert, Sam, to actually give you the detail because she's on the front line there.
Yeah, as Steve said, every market is a little bit different, but we're sort of in that, depending on the property, a 2 to 4 week range in terms of concessions. And I think overall concessions are down from last quarter somewhere in that 10 to 15% range. And again, Q1 is not a strong leasing month, quarter traditionally, so hopefully that trend will continue in the right direction.
Sure. So you're saying, around 2 to 4 weeks of free rent is being offered as a concession in general, and that trend is likely to improve as we get into a, busy leasing season. Is that a fair statement?
It is, but it's not across the entire portfolio.
Of course,
I just want to make that clear. Yeah.
Sure. And then specifically on the Austin market, I know you have only one property there. And is that also a little bit of a property-specific issue, or do you think, it's more of a broader market? And what is the market vacancy in that, in that subsection or sub-market within Austin?
Yeah, our particular sub-market was hit with fairly significant new supply late 2017 into 2018. And the average occupancy is somewhere in the low 90s in that submarket, or it was in Q1. We've certainly seen a trend to the positive as we've moved into Q2.
Sure. Thanks. That's helpful. And then just moving on to property taxes, just to follow up, I think you mentioned around 7% increase over the last year is what was accrued in quarter one. Wondering, is that a conservative estimate or, when do you get some more visibility, whether it's going to be 5% or 8%?
Yeah, so last year, 2018 over 17, I believe we're like 5.5%, same property over same property from a tax increase. This year, we're going kind of back to 7%, which is basically our historical norm kind of for our markets. We won't get visibility until September, October roll around and we actually get the bills, the tax invoices, and then you start going through the appeal process and negotiate a final amount and you get there. So really we hope to have a good look at them kind of beginning of Q4 with not too many kind of outstanding negotiations remaining, but it just we don't know until we get to that point.
Sure. And then just switching gears, what are your thoughts on the AFFO payout ratio, based on your expectation of same-store NOI growth and capital recycling initiatives? I mean, how should we think in that perspective? And are you, prepared to increase leverage in the near term and it can, normalize over time?
Yeah, I mean, I think our payout ratio, we're not concerned where it is right now at all. Everyone does their payout ratios differently. Other companies don't put CapEx into there, even though when you're putting CapEx in, which they say is, to enhance value, but it's recurring year after year. And really, you capture that, what you put in CapEx now, you capture over the next few years in your revenue, which is factored into your AFFO payout ratio, but you never actually capture that expense side of it. So it's really, I don't see it as a very accurate measure. If you want to look at cash flow distribution payout ratio, we're probably one of the lower companies out there, lower REITs out there for what we actually pay out and based on our recurring type cash flow that we spend. So like I say, we're 105% this quarter. Continuing on, that would trend down to, I think at the end of this year, if nothing else changes, current portfolio, that would kind of trend down to low hundreds. And then that would continue to turn down year after year with our same property NOI growth of 3 to 5%. That would kind of go down, say, 5% a year roughly if we kept everything status quo. So I think we're pretty comfortable where we're at. Overall, because we don't have much CapEx, we don't have lots of other cash outflows going like other REITs in Canada. And leverage, we do have a little bit of room. As we mentioned in our subsequent events, we extended our credit facility or expanded the credit facility and refinanced Walker Commons in there. So we have a little bit of room also to use that if we need to increase leverage.
Sure. That's helpful. And maybe just a last question on the valuation of, on the balance sheet. Your cap rate went down to, I think, 5.02 from 5.05, nominal fair value gains. Did you also revisit your, cap rate or fair value of properties in the context of the recent portfolio trade of $1.4 billion? And, does that how does that compare to your portfolio? I mean, in terms of read across for the valuation.
Yeah, we didn't make any adjustments for the recent transaction out there. We used our appraisals, third-party appraiser for market transactions on a property-by-property basis, and that's how our cap rates are done. We don't have any comment, I guess, on the third-party transaction. The external, the other transaction that was done out there.
The only comment I would add is it was a portfolio, and there's a modest portfolio premium typically included, and I think they came in at roughly a 4.8 cap, which suggests there was that bit of a premium.
Sure, fair enough. I'll turn it back. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you. Your next question is from Mario Saric from Scotiabank. Mario, please go ahead.
Hey, Mario.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good
morning.
Just maybe a couple of follow-on questions with respect to the incentives. What's the average incentive per suite in Dallas during Q1?
I think we're about 2 weeks on average.
But not for every
property.
Not averaged across.
Yeah. Across the portfolio, it's about 2 weeks, yeah.
Okay. Would you happen to have an occupied rent per suite in Dallas for Q1?
Occupied.
I can get back on that. I don't have that in front of me.
Yep.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yep.
That'd be helpful. And then with respect to the incentives, I think you mentioned that they were down about 10 to 15% year over year in Q1. I think that number was closer to 50% in Q4. So as the incentives burn off, clearly that percentage is going to decline over time.
Right.
You touched on it on a previous question, but that 10 to 15% over the remainder of the year when leasing activity gets a bit stronger, can you see that going back up to 25, 30%, 40%?
In terms of a reduction again over last year, is that what you're...
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope so. And typically in a stronger leasing period, like a Q2 and Q3 are typically the strongest leasing periods, in a strong, healthy market, you have to offer fewer and fewer concessions. I don't have any numbers at hand really to speak to it yet, but the trend seems to be positive. Whether it will be 25 to 40% below where we were this time last year, I don't know yet, but the trend is certainly moving in the right direction.
Okay. You mentioned one of the goals was to reduce tenant turnover. How did tenant turnover in Q1 compare to Q1 of last year?
It's pretty comparable, actually. Again, a lot of that has to do with it's just not a busy leasing season. The focus is really moving into Q2 and Q3 to reduce tenant turnover, where we typically have the highest volume of lease expiries.
Okay. Is it too early to get a sense of how it's trended in Q2 thus far?
Yes.
Okay. I found your comment on new supply a bit interesting. I think you mentioned that it seems higher construction costs could be tapering new supply growth a little bit. Are there any kind of tangible data points that you've seen, whether it's permitting activity, tightness in construction financing for, yeah. for new development that would align with that observation?
It's been a bit anecdotal, and also discussing with some of the brokers about the cost of construction going forward and the increases from last year. Sort of north of $200 a square foot for new builds, and in some areas it's much higher than that. But you know, our thought is going forward, although 2019 is still projected to be a fairly significant supply increase, especially in Dallas. But moving forward, if these construction costs continue to increase, the assumption on our side is supply will slowly come down to more sort of traditional levels.
Got it. Okay. And then I guess my last question is pertains to Walker Commons. It looks like you repaid the mortgage with the credit facility during the quarter. Presumably it's now unencumbered. What was the thought process there, and does that indicate perhaps an openness to sell the asset, or are you pretty comfortable with the asset going forward?
Yeah, I think we're pretty comfortable with the asset. The mortgage is actually maturing in July. So we were able to, within the 3 months, we were able to actually pay off that mortgage early without any prepayment penalty. So it's just kind of getting it onto that credit facility to give us that flexibility to kind of draw on the cash when we need to versus repaying it if we have some extra cash at the time.
Got it. And are the plans there for 5-year debt, 10-year debt? It seems like the markets are pretty fluid.
Yeah. I mean, right now we're happy to keep on the credit facility. There's not much of a spread difference on our variable rate versus a little bit higher, but we can actually not use it all if we don't need to. So I'd call it a wash in the interest outflow by having a fixed debt on it. So we'll continue to monitor the assets we have, and if we want to put some fixed rate, if we see rates going some direction, we can do that. But right now we're happy just to leave it on the facility.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Mario.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. As a reminder, should you have any questions, please press star followed by one. And your next question is from Troy McLean from BMO Capital Markets. Troy, please go ahead.
Good morning.
Hey, Troy.
Hey, Troy. Just wondering if you can comment on, are you seeing more assets coming to market for sale kind of in your target markets? And then just curious, like the asking prices on the stuff you're seeing for sale, how would they compare to replacement cost?
Well, the first question, yes, it's a very robust supply, and that's the beauty of the 1031 exchange tax treatment in the U.S. is it's always a pretty liquid market, so we can always find good opportunities, and I would say there's certainly no shortage of good opportunities that we're looking at present. The second question is a little bit of a loaded question in the sense that if you look at a 10-year-old asset, it's typically below replacement cost because it's 10 years old. So across the portfolio, across the markets, assets on average always trade below replacement cost because of that. When you're looking at brand new assets, it's really a question of a path of growth. And so you're in essence buying, you'd have to argue pretty darn close to replacement because they've just been built. So I'm not sure if that answers your question or not, but it's kind of a bit of a broad simplification when you look at the different sectors of the different asset classes that we look at.
Would it be fair to say that rising replacement costs should put upward pressure on most assets, even if they're a little older?
Oh, absolutely. That's happening already and has for the last couple of years. And to Sam's comment earlier, we're hearing feedback, and we'll certainly look for data to provide to you guys written data on the impact of the increased construction cost on future supply. So we believe that's going to ebb the flow of supply a little bit in various markets, which is obviously be good for us.
And then earlier, Sam, you made the comment that tenant turnover is about the same as it has been in the past. I was just wondering, is the percentage of tenants leaving that is going into home ownership, is that changing from where it's been in the past?
Provided
you have the information. Oh, sorry, what's that?
Yeah, it's been pretty consistent over the last couple of years. Yep. We haven't seen a spike, for example, or a decrease of people moving into home ownership.
And then my final question is just on, it's a tight labor market, and you've mentioned the new supply. Are you having trouble keeping leasing agents or property managers? Or what's the turnover like at that level?
The challenge remains in the leasing agent side, which, to be fair, has always been a fairly fluid market in terms of employees, simply because most leasing agents are not, it's not a career choice, obviously, for a lot of them. The bigger challenge is on the maintenance side, is keeping the key maintenance personnel because they are being lured away by significant signing bonuses to the construction by the construction company.
So the cost for those for that labor going up, or you just have to make do with maybe getting lower skilled employees to fill those positions?
No, we won't go with lower skill because that doesn't help anybody at the end of the day. So yeah, we have seen some pressure on wage increases, which was anticipated for 2019.
Perfect. I'll turn it back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Troy.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up from Brad Sturges at IA Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi. Just a quick question on G&A. Just with the TSX listing, is that cost going to be fully impact? Is the full impact in Q2, or was there a little bit of cost in Q1?
Yeah, it's basically going to be in Q2. Very nominal, just kind of legal costs that we've incurred, but nothing major in Q1. We're still waiting for the final amount from the TSX themselves for the billing, so I still don't know exact amount, but whatever it will be, it'll be in Q2.
I guess it'll remind me what the expectation is for that cost.
It's hard to actually determine. Initially, I don't even really want to quote a number because I could be way off here. It's just hard to determine until I get the final invoice from them what the amount will be. Sorry.
Okay, no worries. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. You may proceed.
Great. Thank you, operator. So on behalf of Samantha, Scott, Andrew, and the entire Pure Multi Management team, I'd like to thank you for spending time with us today. Please do not hesitate to call us with any follow-on questions at any time, as we're always happy to chat. So thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to some very strong coming quarters. Cheers.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference call. We appreciate your joining us, and have a great day.